Accession number 30249, reel 4.
I had enough to do, really. But I could have skied and I could have snowshoed and all sorts. But,
you know. I suppose you had to sketch them and yes, record exactly, them. Exactly. Yes, were you expected to produce with your Norwegian?
No, I wasn't. That was purely... they thought my education was incomplete, really. Mm,
but did you find you were attracted?
I did some work, yes. I mean, I did some work. Some work came out of it, yeah. And I think I sold a couple to 4-2 Commando.
Would they have been in these white snow suits?
Yeah, they wear these sort of flimsy white tops over there.
So that's quite a challenge for an artist, isn't it?
White on white. Yes.
Yeah,
a whole new set of problems, really. Mm. Yeah. But I coped. You find ways. You
know. Was this what sent you to Kosovo, that connection?
Well, no. I think I'd started to get a bit of a reputation by then. And... That must be the reason. My word had gone around that there was this idiot, you know, who was prepared to do silly things. I mean, they always. I think they're quite surprised actually when I turn up. Sometimes they're quite surprised how old I am. I mean, I'm not. Well, I don't think I'm that old, but I mean, I'm
yes,
a lot.
Yes, and you don't. No, I'm not flattering you, but you know, people might like to know this, that you really don't look very old.
You need glasses.
You sort of the 40s, I would put you in, and you say you're 60. Mm. And, so this is important for people to know.
Yes.
I think.
Mm. Yeah. But I mean, you know, the average age of a Royal Marine is like 23 or something. You know, when I pitch up, they must sometimes think, you know, what the hell's he doing here, you know. But I definitely must have got this reputation for being happy to go into strange places, you know.
And I suppose really the important thing is your art, that they must have liked your
yeah
your
yeah
work.
And
is
they happening? They really do they like professionalism without doubt, and I've noticed this. They want artists, if they're going to have an artist, they want a professional. They want to be able to understand what he's produced for a start. They want to know which way up to hang it. And yeah, they want a professional. If I turn up, they expect me to be able to produce the goods, because they can't tell me how to paint. I will pitch up and they will say, so what do you want? We would like to show you this, that and the other. Is that enough? What do you want? So there's quite a good two-way sort of action going on. But they admire professionalism in other walks of life. And I obviously I'm professional enough anyway, which is, so, you know, we can work well together.
It does, you know, from what you've told me so far, Gordon, it indicates the importance of having that initial break, doesn't it?
Yeah,
the opportunity.
As it turned out, it was a lucky break. Mm-hmm. I had a student from one of the local schools come to me a couple of years ago. In fact, his father came to me. I was giving a talk and his father came up in the interval. And he said to me, you lead a fantastic life. My son's about to leave school, but he thinks he might want to be an artist. Thinks he might like to be a war artist. And this lad was 16, and his father was pretty silly. And he tried to tell me that we've sailed the Atlantic or something, and therefore we're really tough, and so my son would like to be a war artist. And I thought, and this lad came to talk to me about it. He couldn't even draw at that stage. You know, he had the audacity to sit here and tell me that he was going to be a war artist, you know. And I said, well, why? Well, you know, because it would be an adventure. I mean, I don't think any war artist that I've read about has ever set out at the beginning of his career and said, I'm going to be a war artist. I mean, I want to talk about some of these other war artists later on, but they were artists who just, for whatever reason, were in the wrong place at the right time, you know, and got hauled into it. You know, nobody in their right mind sets out to do a job like this, because it's...
It sort of indicates a trendy idea.
It's glamorous stuff, isn't it? And it is. It's very glamorous when you stand up and talk about it in a village hall or something, and people ooh and ah. But it's not very glamorous when you're on the ground, you know. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it.
I'm a masochist. But did you begin to think of yourself as being, as a war artist?
I suppose, I mean, after this exercise in Turkey, I mean, I really enjoyed that, and I thought this is really, that was something, you know. But I didn't know a way forward, to be honest. I mean, and then I got a call in early 2001 from 3 Commando Brigade, who were in Kosovo, and I got a call from a Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Mason, who's turned into a great, great friend, lovely guy. And he phoned up and he said, we're in Kosovo, trying to sort things out, and word's come down to us that you're the man to come and do some work for us. Are you interested? And at that point, I was talking on the phone to him, that first conversation, I thought, I have got something here. And it was only then that it really dawned on me this thing is gathering momentum. All of a sudden, I'm not just going out and painting a few pictures. This is getting serious. You know, people are actually beginning to think of me as somebody who can do a job.
In fact, a war artist.
Yeah. And until then, I wasn't a war artist. You know, I'd done one trip into theatre, but I wouldn't have called myself a war artist.
But you were being considered as that, weren't you?
Yes.
The fact, yes.
Yeah, and they already assumed I was a war artist. Anyway, so Jeff organised for me to go out, and I flew out, and it must have been, I think it was January 2001.
So that would have been after the war, wouldn't it? With
K4.
Would that have been
K4? And although the fighting as such had stopped, there was a lot of low-level terrorism, banditry. There were some nasty things going on, you know. So I got taken into the middle of that. So the Royal Air Force flew me to Pristina. I've gotten used to it now, but travelling on my own, you know, with my kit, amongst all these other sort of people that are doing it all the time, you know, it's quite daunting. I wouldn't say it's lonely, but you never know who you're sitting next to. You really never know who you're sitting with. You get people from, you know, the Ministry of Defence. You get civil servants. You get generals. You know, you get privates. You get nurses. You get all manner of people on these flights. So they're always quite interesting. You rub up against all sorts of people, and they've all got something useful to impart, you know.
Were you in uniform then, Gordon?
In Kosovo, I wasn't. I was in hill walking kit, because it was midwinter.
Were you sort of conscious that you had to have the right sort of clothing, colour wise?
Not at that point, no. I mean, they kitted me out with some stuff when I got there, but I just knew it was going to be damn cold, and I'd wear my winter walking kit. And then if I needed anything extra, they'd give it to me when I got there. Mm.
Did you have any protection there? Did you, given the fighting that was still going on?
Yeah.
Spasmodic, were you given...
Oh, I think I probably had... I must have had a flak jacket at various times, I think, yeah. I mean, we flew into Pristina, and Pristina was run by the Russians, the airport. The Russians took the airport really early on and hung on to it like grim death. So the Russians sort of manned the perimeter, I think. But the Italians were at that point running the organisation, so it was a bit haphazard. Nice uniforms, but nice boys. Well, I landed there, and I mean, that was, I was into theatre properly then, and we landed. They took me into a large tent where they checked who I was, etc. Moved me to another tent where I had to sit down, and I had to listen for half an hour to the political situation. They briefed all the new, anybody that was there for the first time, they briefed you on the latest political situation, the latest situation with terrorists and weapon smugglers, and where all the recent problems have been with booby traps and mines and this sort of thing. And then I had to go and look at all the range of booby traps and mines that I might encounter. And then after all that, I went through and picked my kit up. And I was due to be met by somebody, and they weren't there. And I suppose I partially panicked, really, because, you know, you're in the war zone and you're thinking, you know, how do I get there then? But there was a bus pulled up, and loads of Royal Marines climbed on it, guys in green berets, and I thought, well, if I follow them, I'm bound to get somewhere. So I jumped on the bus with all these lads, and off we went. And it stopped just outside Pristina, properly at a fort. And I hopped out with all these Royal Marines and went up to the main gate and spoke to the guard, and I said, I'm not sure if I'm in the right place. but I'm looking for Lieutenant Colonel Mason. Anyway, he went inside and made some phone calls, and I was at the right place. And the man who was had been asked to come and meet me had got the times wrong, or something, or my plane was early or something. So he was chasing halfway around Kosovo for the rest of the day trying to find me. But yeah, and I've learned since, you find your own way, for goodness sake, you know. News have been announced, you know. So yeah, I met the colonel, and he and I hit it, two sentences, and we were both laughing like drains, you know. So we hit it off straight away, and he was second in command of the British sector.
So his name was Colonel Mason. What was his first name?
Jeff.
J-E-F-F. Jeff.
And he's actually said to me, because I had a meeting with him the other night, he would be quite happy to talk to you as part of this interview, because the angle, you know, coming from somebody who commissions the work and knows the artist and knows the other side, so you might be interested in. So I can put you in contact.
Yes, that would be very interesting.
Well, it might
yes,
be.
Yes. Yeah.
He's now a brigadier, so you know, speaks with a certain amount of authority.
I have to be careful.
I picked the right man.
So yeah. What did they want of you in Kosovo? What were they after?
Well, they also wanted one large painting, and they weren't sure what they wanted, other than they wanted a painting to depict their deployment in Kosovo. Open brief again, really. So what we'll do, Gordon, is we'll give you a taste of everything, and anything else you want, you shout, and we'll see if we can organise it. So they did just that. I went on street patrols in Pristina, in the city centre, where the boys were stopping people in the street, and because they thought, you know, what have you got under your jacket? You know, they said, have you got a Kalashnikov tucked up your, you know, jumper? Did all that sort of street patrol stuff in the city. Went on foot patrols out in the countryside. Did night patrols, night foot patrols. And the weather, I can remember a foot patrol at night. and it was snowing, and the slush on the roads was freezing, and most of the roads weren't surfaced anyway, so you're splashing through mud and things. I just found it quite extraordinary. I absolutely loved it, you know, trudging along with these lads doing the job, you know, and again feeling what it's like, you know, when it's below zero and you're covered in mud and filth, and you know the wind's howling, and you're trying to keep the place secure. You know.
Would you do night paintings? No, is that something?
No, I've
done
one or two. I've done one or two. Yeah, and you get, you know, street lights and shop fronts reflecting light into slushy puddles. It's a whole yet another, you know, so many opportunities to paint. Mm. It's unbelievable.
Well, what was your impression of Pristina and the area you were patrolling regarding the state of buildings and the people?
Well, I mean, Pristina itself probably wasn't too bad. I mean, it'd been quite badly beaten up in a place or two. I mean, there were some neat holes in office blocks where missiles had drilled holes through buildings. You know, very neat holes where they passed through. There wasn't too much damage around Pristina, really. Outside Pristina, it wasn't quite so much fun. But the city itself was just bleak. And again, it was midwinter. It's not the best place to see.
And the people, what were they like? You know,
I thought generally the people there were okay. In Pristina, I didn't meet any hostility. A lot of indifference. But if you're carrying a gun and they're not, then they're generally either polite or indifferent. But you know, rule of the gun. You know, that happens everywhere. Really, the man with the biggest gun gets respect. You know?
Did you get any idea of whether they were Albanian, Kosovans, or Serbs?
Well,
did this, you know, crop up during your time there?
We had an incident later on. Pristina was predominantly Albanian. So was most of the country, I suppose, then. But further up country, that was a different story. Sticking with Pristina for a minute, I went to... they took me... I always get invited into briefings. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, I get into high-level briefings on all these trips. They trust me. You know, and they'll be working out their operations for the next week or something. And I, come and sit at the back and, you know, come and see how it works. Come and see what we do, you know. Something that came out of a briefing, it was probably my first proper briefing in Pristina. This was a morning briefing, and they were going through the news, what's happened before they went on to the nitty gritty, you know. And it had just been discovered that an African contingent of the peacekeeping force, they'd been detailed, their job was to clear mines and booby traps. And they were clearing mines during the day and then flogging them back to the locals at $1 a time in the evenings. You know, you never quite know who your friends are.
Did you
not funny at all? Yeah.
Did you get? Was that sort of just the tip of what was going on with the mixed
probably
groups?
Probably, yeah. Different people have different values. Some people. Some people don't get paid as much as others.
Yes, I think that's a point.
I don't think I'm blaming anybody. Mm. I'm not blaming anybody, you know. Mm. But you run into all these different, you know, things that you never have thought of, you know, unless you're there and you see it or hear it. Yeah. You know.
Did you yourself see the different nationals? You know, the Americans, for instance, in
I didn't
Kosovo.
There. I didn't. It was mainly I was in the British sector all the time, so I didn't run into anybody else. I mean, the Americans were further south. The Americans were in a big base, and apparently were too frightened to come out, and the Royal Marines had to go down and do their patrolling for them, you know. But, anyway, I did my bit round Pristina, various patrols, etc.
What sort of drawings were you doing there then, Gordon?
Well, I was still taking a lot of photographs at that stage, because we still weren't well, mainly I suppose there, because it was so cold I couldn't sit out and do very much. I mean, the paint would freeze quite rapidly and things, you know.
Probably a bit risky too, would it have been to...
Well, you never know. This is you never know what's who's watching you, ever. So you just have to be very careful, extremely careful, and do as you're told. And if your escort says it's time to move, you move. Quite simple, you know.
Do you sketch very quickly? You know, if you wanted, say, to sketch what a soldier was doing, would you be able to do something very...
Yeah, I can get a few lines down rapidly. I mean, that just works as a little aid, really, to the memory more than anything, you know. I need a bit longer to do anything that's going to be of great use as reference, you know, but I scribble a bit sometimes instead of writing words, you know, and that it, I can just get enough to trigger something off, you know. So I was doing that, and again, as I say, lots of photography and things like that, and just picking up bits here and there, you know. You get leaflets or literature. I mean, there's bits of literature in the forts and places, and sometimes it's useful. And I'm busy photographing. I'm looking for detail all the time. I'm looking for kit. You know, somebody's got a weapon I haven't seen before, and I'll ask them if I can we lay it down somewhere, and I'll photograph it from different angles, or different bits of uniform, or, you know, all the time I'm watching out for all those little things, or a new vehicle, you know. So I'm not just trying to absorb all the atmosphere and stuff. It's all the little bits and pieces that, you know, later on, if you haven't got it, you're going to need it. You know?
I suppose this is an important aspect of war art. You're particularly doing these commissions, am I right in thinking, compared with, say, your normal art, you've actually got to get this right?
If you're going to put detail in, it's got to be right. They don't ask for detail all the time, but if you're going to paint a machine gun, or, you know, or a badge or a pair of boots, got to be right, and it should be. I mean, there's still plenty of room for artistic license, but, you know, you've got what I produce. I think everything I produce for the military is it's going to be hung on a wall for the next 100 years at least, you know, and it's important that you get it right.
I suppose, in a way, you're doing it's documentation.
Yeah, I'm producing. I'm well aware of the fact that I'm producing a record. It's not just a nice painting that's, you know, got lots of smoke and dust in it. You know, that shows people how clever I am. It's also a record of a moment in time, and that's very important. And I realised that very early on, that you know, I'm here to record something.
So that was quite a new departure for you, was it, that part, sort of painting machinery and guns and things?
And in a way, painting people. I mean, I did life drawing at college, but I didn't put people in my landscapes, because I sort of told myself I didn't like people. I don't want people cluttering up my landscapes, you know. And then all of a sudden, I'm faced with paintings, you know. I mean, I did a painting of a colours presentation on Plymouth Hoe that had 700 people in it. I mean, fortunately, half of them, it was the backs of their heads, you know. But you've got to bite the bullet, you know. You might not like doing it, but you're jolly well going to have to find a way of doing it, and doing it well. So I have benefited as an artist.
Do you also
hugely from being pushed to do things, you know.
Looking at some of your portraits here, well, I would call them portraits.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
they're real people, aren't they?
Yeah.
Did you have experience with drawing likenesses before? You know, of actually getting a face that looked like somebody?
Not really, it was never important.
But was it now? This was becoming...
Yes, but sometimes now it's also important not to get a likeness. There are certain people I've worked with who will neither want a photograph of them or a likeness. But that comes a bit later on as well. But
yes,
you know, so
security.
Yeah,
yes.
If you're working with special forces, the last thing they want is a likeness. So that makes life a bit easier.
Yes, and yet I suppose it's a challenge in itself that you've got to get the feel without the
But the whole thing, I mean. Painting, I never painted explosions. What's an explosion look like? Then you suddenly discover that, you know, different musicians, munitions, you know, a mortar makes a different explosion to an artillery shell, and you know, a missile does a different thing to, you know, to so you have, all of a sudden you're having to find out. So what's that smoke plume look like, you know, and what's an explosion look like, and at what stage are you going to paint it, you know, if you're going to paint an explosion, when do you do it, point of impact, or 20 seconds later, or a minute later, there's a whole range of problems. It's quite extraordinary.
And I suppose action as well comes to
you. Yeah, how, and how do you depict action? Do you want action? I mean, I've produced a piece for special forces that we'll come to later, but they wanted a 5-day firefight put into one painting. 5 days, you know, so you have to, you've got to work out where it happened, when it happened, what time of day, you know. So it's it's quite a task. And I'm not sure that some artists really realise just how involved the job is, to be honest.
End of reel 4, Gordon Rushman.